listening to the SoPod Network. In this episode, internal and external communication manager Skylar Bayman sits down with Southern Company CEO Tom Fannin to discuss his latest recognition as one of the most admired CEOs by the Atlanta Business Chronicle.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Skylar Bayman, and welcome to the Tom Fannin Show. Tom, this is our first podcast episode. Thanks for doing this. I know it's part of your leadership style that you like to say you communicate relentlessly, and this falls right in line.
Yeah, look, Skylar, this is great stuff. You know, I've always enjoyed the opportunity to get out and tell the story. But now more than ever, that story is really important, especially during times of change. So many people kind of wonder where we're going. They're wondering what are all the external factors that are causing us to do what we do every day. And so this notion of communicating relentlessly is something that I've had for a long time. But I think now more than ever is more important. We've got to get out there and tell the
story.
That's
right. And I want to let the listeners know, we're going to shoot to do these, if not a little bit more often than that. And as issues arise that we want to communicate, we can turn on the microphones. I can tell everybody we're here in Tom's office with headphones on. Here, just having a chat. That's the goal of this, is to let everybody know what's going on. I wanted to move on. We're near the beginning of August, but in July, you got a great recognition from the Atlanta Business Chronicle, named one of their most admired CEOs. Congratulations on that. They actually sent us a questionnaire that they wanted you to fill out. And I thought, well, what a better way to do it than right here on the podcast. So I've got a series of 9 questions I'm going to shoot at you. And you can just give us your answer if that's okay.
Yeah, but Skylar, you know, last year it was Global Energy CEO of the Year. I think you're getting, I'm getting these things because I'm getting old. So I think that just kind of happens at this point in your career.
That is a sign. So congratulations.
Hey, wait, you should have said no. It's everything.
First question. What can other CEOs do to win such great admiration from their stakeholders?
So I think the basics are what often get overlooked in those kinds of things. You know, I think first and foremost, good leaders are good listeners. I really do think you need to kind of take a breath and let other people tell you their stories and make sure that you have the right kind of context in which to do your own thinking. I think secondly is this notion of putting long-term first. You know, I love to tell the story of there's 3 kind of companies in the world. There's birds of prey, moving prey, and roadkill. Well, it really, whether you're one of those 3, depends on what your perspective is on how you define success. And I think birds of prey define their success in the longest terms possible. I think we do that at Southern. Setting your long-term objective, your aspiration first, you make your short-term results, quarterly earnings or whatever it is, kind of follow. But you start long-term. Obviously, the other end of the spectrum is roadkill. Those are companies that lose their ethics. That's the easiest way to see them. Think Enron. The category in the middle, moving prey, is so much fun. And I swear you see them all the time. These are companies that define their success in the short term, next quarter's earnings or whatever it is that's important to them. So I think the first thing is to say, let's be very clear about our long-term perspective. Let's be very clear about what the vision is for the company. And very often when we do that, I think it requires both vision and courage. So often, the way we assess the future may not be apparent to everybody. And in fact, in order to really manage risk in the long run, you have to take action on things that are kind of not widely held. You know, in financial terms, it'd be like there are options that are out of the money. They don't currently exist. And so this notion of communication is one that we come back to. That is, we've got to be able to articulate that future. And we've got to be able to have the courage to say, this is something we have to think about, even though we can't see it today, and be able to get that out to the folks. I guess the last thing that I would really just point out, among a million other things probably, But it's this idea of telling the truth. And it's not that you don't tell the truth, you lie. It's that you don't tell the truth in terms of telling everybody everything that you can see, especially if it is tough. The tougher the news is, the more you want to tell people as fast as you can tell them, as completely as you can tell them, so that together we can work on ways to avoid the problem, as well as it allows people a more chance to do more personal planning.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny. I think about Southern Company, and I like talking to new hires, and they're sort of, what's the key to Southern Company? And I always say the key to getting integrated and having success, to me, is focus on our values. If you want to know the blueprint, they're right out there, our values.
Yeah.
Right? Those four core beliefs, those four core values, if you can master those, you'll be fine here. And the second question goes to that, talking about the keys to CEOs building a high level of trust in their organizations. Unquestionable trust, one of our values.
So, and here's the other thing. Following through on what you say, this trust notion. But I think what really builds trust is accountability. And that starts with me. So when things are great, we all celebrate and we share in the victory. Victory is about us. But when there's tough times, we've been through some of those over the past few years, that begins with me. And be able to stand in front of people, tell them the truth, and be accountable for the result. I really think that builds a followership. People will believe you whether it's good or bad. You know, when things are good, it's easy to be out there. It's when things are tough. That I think, really breeds trust.
And I think goes to, you know, being a leader, not just the leader of a Fortune 500 company, but being a leader in your community. And so what is going beyond leadership? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, look, I think leadership is all about this notion of personal responsibility transcending to responsibility for your teams, however you define that. My team is Southern Company. But I think real leaders project way beyond the four corners of their job responsibility, and they take accountability for the enterprise. Now, what does that mean? The enterprise is something bigger than yourself. It is not your family. It's your community. It's your church. It's your state. It's not, in the business sense, it's not Southern Company in my sense. It's the electric utility industry. And in the broadest sense, it's American and international commerce. That we all work to make the communities we serve better off because we're there. Those are elemental things. That can take, based on anybody's strengths and preferences on how they want to engage, a lot of different avenues. Like for me, it's been kind of in addition to energy and energy policy, it goes to my interest in the Fed and my role there. And now I spend a lot of time on national security issues. Certainly that inures to the benefit of Southern Company. But you know what? Building bridges into industries like the financial industry. I've been working with Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan, Brian Moynihan, CEO of Bank of America, telecom, Randall Stevens, CEO of AT&T, and his top lieutenant, John Donovan. Taking an interest for the good of America really does help the public good. It also helps our company. I think those are the kinds of things that earmark good leadership.
And a lot of people subscribe to the belief, and I'm sure you do too, that leaders are not born, they're made. Right? You learn leadership, whether it's a learned behavior or something that you can build throughout your life.
And you know what else is fascinating? So when I got this job, one of the things I engaged Buddy C, you know, he's our corporate shrink. Lord knows we need a corporate shrink, right? But what I had Buddy do was to go back as far back as Alvin Vogel and talk about what kind of personality Alvin had. To Ed Addison, to Bill Dahlberg, to Alan Franklin, to David Ratcliffe. And it really charted out kind of what kind of people were they? Who were their key teammates? What were the pressing issues facing them during their tenure? And what was fascinating was a learning that I hope we all adopt. leadership can take all different forms, and all different kinds of people can be leaders. So like you say, there's not like a one size fit all in terms of this is what leadership is and what it looks like and how it manifests itself. Especially when you consider the role leaders play in building effective teams and pushing issues down in the organization. That is, I think, unique to every circumstance and unique to every individual.
Is there a certain leader during your youth, during your mid-career, someone that was your favorite, someone who you really admire to this day?
Well, I think that all depends on life situations. In other words, when I was growing up, it was always coaches. Mm-hmm. And I always loved being coached hard. You know, I like the idea of accountability. I like the idea of results and being measurable. Early in my career, it was the vice president of finance and treasurer of Southern Company, a guy named Bill Maynor. He was tough as nails. And I frankly had seen grown men in chairs across from this guy weeping. I mean, wow. He was so tough. But here's the thing with Maynor. If you could satisfy him, number one, you didn't go into his office without being on your game. And so he required the best that we had to offer. And then if you could stand up to him, you could stand up to anybody. So I really appreciate that. But even, you know, as I just thinking through the different CEOs, as I just mentioned, you go back to somebody like Ed Addison. I think he was the first modern CEO we had at Southern. He was the first guy that made us start to act like a system. I go to Bill Dahlberg, the guy that inspired with enthusiasm and growth and you know, call me Bill. Then we transitioned to Alan Franklin, an engineer's engineer, the guy that really made us focus back what we were good at, and that is the business we know and the place we know and the customers we know. And then David Ratcliffe, who I thought built around the notion of our what's, making, moving, and selling electricity, the idea of our values and how the how's, our behaviors, really are as powerful and perhaps more important even than our what's.
This is a next question that they threw at us that I think is going to be an interesting one for a lot of people to hear your thoughts on. And I like it as well. It says, please explain how you and your organization make tough decisions. You referenced it earlier. It's not all great times. There's some tough times and tough decisions that the company has to make.
And more to make yet ahead.
That's right. So tell us a little bit about the process that goes through that.
Yeah. So I really believe that the, you know, what is the, you want to be a, so you want to be a millionaire.
That's right.
One of the most powerful things you can do is phone a friend or ask the audience. Right?
That's right.
My version of that is to engage a lot of people in the decision. And I think we've developed a culture, particularly at the management council level. So this would be all the operating company CEOs and then the functional heads, you know, like chief legal counsel, chief financial officer, all that sort of thing, head of external, Chris Womack, is really just have a no holds barred engagement on what the conversation means. And if you look at the personality types, again, of my management team, we are terrific at the what's. I really think we get, you know, adding up A to B to C to D and coming up with really good engineered conclusions. The things that we always have to remind ourselves to ask is, how will this impact people? What will human beings do in reaction to these tough decisions? And so we have the discipline, I think, to go through those steps and evaluate not only the what's, but and the how's. And that's the way we do it. Generally speaking, when you have tough decisions, you have enough time to engage. It's not an emergency. And very often, as I find it, emergencies are the product of poor planning. A lot of times you got to go through scenario analysis and you got to go through, hey, where are we headed? Take a breath. Let's all kind of sit back and figure out, are we doing the things we need to do necessary not to be successful, remember, in the short run, but really preserve as our primary planning criteria long-term results. If you get your long-term stuff done right, the number of emergencies you encounter should be few and far between.
let's flip the other side of the coin and go to the next question. We've dealt with the tough decisions. Let's talk about details on one of the top accomplishments in the last 12 months. I won't hold you to a calendar year. It could be 2019, 2018. But something that you're the most proud of that that Southern Company. And
well, let me tell you, boy, and this one's been tough too, and it remains tough. But since we had the unfortunate circumstance of having Westinghouse go bankrupt and Toshiba teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, how in the world we were able to pick up the mantle on that project.
And Vogel 3 and 4.
Yeah,
course.
On Vogel 3 and 4, thank you. And really transition from relying on a third-party contractor where so many people worked on having an effective contract, and that did insulate our customers to a great deal. But son of a gun, we had to pick up the pieces and get that thing going. And so I'd argue the people on the site, Steve Kaczynski and Glenn Chick and the whole team down there, had done a heck of a job. I would argue our engagement with the state political regulatory processes has been terrific. Paul Bowers, Chris Kaminsky and team. I would argue our engagement at a federal level, doing things like extending production tax credits where there was no other constituent that really benefited from that other than our customers. Getting the strength of the United States government in support of us in dealing with the government of Japan and Toshiba. And really everything now necessary to complete the project. I'm very, very proud of that. I think the other thing that we have done, I've touched on a wee bit already, but it's the idea of kind of maintaining the fundamentals of our business. You know, when I first got this job, it's kind of honor the past, build for the future. When you think about the fundamentals of Southern throughout Plant Ratcliffe / Kemper County, throughout where we are now at Vogel, and all the stresses we've been through, look at our track record. We continue to be tops in the United States at customer satisfaction. The reliability and now the resilience, even more so, of our system. We run a great utility, and we revere people that can do that. That's terrific stuff. If you look at the fundamentals of price, that's really good too. We can always do better, but son of a gun, we're doing well. And then finally, outside the company, I think the things that I'm really proud of, we have, I think, uniquely positioned Southern, its brand, externally. I think we're the leading voice on energy policy in America. I think we have linked the notion of good energy policy with good economic growth and developed a unique voice there. And now, lastly, I think we have developed a unique voice on national security matters. When I think about the potential for an existential threat to our American way of life, maintaining electricity in the center of what they call the lifeline sectors in America, I think we've done a great job there.
I know when you go out, you get asked a lot about those type of the energy policy, what's the future look like for the industry, things of that nature. And you are happy to talk about it. You get asked, we were in Colorado recently at the Aspen Ideas Festival, Washington, D.C., coast to coast. So it's interesting to me that the Business Chronicle asked how your organization is changing or adapting or preparing for the future, because it's something we do here all the time.
We do it all the time. And in fact, one of the things I'm so proud of, it's the 50th anniversary of our research and development organization. Here's the value of that kind of competence. I think until we really celebrated it, we took for granted a lot of the innovation this company has done. And in fact, we are the only company in this industry still doing proprietary, robust research and development, been doing it now for 50 years. And we've been standing alone in that regard for so many years. Son of a gun, in the past, a lot of our R&D was built with defending coal. And certainly during my time in the chairman's role, we've transitioned away from coal significantly. It used to be, before I was here, 70% of our energy came from coal. This year, I think we're projecting now around 23%. Just got through with some preparation for my earnings call coming up shortly. And so, son of a gun, we have made this huge shift. One, to renewables. Well, at one time we were the largest owner of solar in America. We've recycled some capital, bought and sold some things. So we're probably not there now. But at one time, the leading owner of solar in America, now pivoting to wind. And I think broadly, one of the big challenges we're facing, and this falls under the category, I think, in some respects, of creative destruction, really goes to two things. Honor the past, build for the future, iconic company, most admired for years and years. Why would you want to change that? Well, we are transitioning the fleet. We're going to now a commitment, and I'm proud of this, first major company in our industry to commit to low to no carbon. When you look around on the United States and really the world, the discourse is unavoidable. And so my predisposition for any of these big issues is, how can we play offense? How can we create an environment where change is not foisted upon us, but rather we influence change and make it work to our advantage? So that is one of my big initiatives in moving to low to no carbon, is how do we transition the fleet and still be as successful as we have been? That's kind of big thing one. Big thing two really goes to the notion of how technology is influencing change, and our customers' requirements are influencing even more change, to where I call it the age of big iron, where in the past we made, moved, and sold energy at scale. I think technology is enabling us to miniaturize, make, move, and sell. And so now, through a combination of efforts of Southern Power, of PowerSecure, and Sequent, we are able to bring an offering to the customer location where we make, move, and sell on their premises. Now, today, that is a tiny piece of our business. But where you see the future may be headed, I think we have developed a small but reasonably important option that if that does start to occur at scale, we will be positioned better than anybody else in the world to do that. A simple data point that we should all be very proud of. We've all heard of microgrids, right?
Right.
Southern Company today owns an 85% share in America of microgrids. That's amazing stuff. And when I think about this idea of the future, distributed infrastructure is what I call it, it's much more than just a microgrid. It's much more than solar panels on your rooftop, distributed generation. It really goes to storage devices and switchgear and other proprietary items within the make, move, and sell model. So, man, I think we're trying to invent that future, and I think we're doing a great job.
And I think one of the points that you discuss a lot in this type of topic is, it can be scary. You've mentioned for 100 years, we've been having a great business. We've been doing amazing.
Why in the world would you want to mess that up?
That's right. But you can't keep waves off the beach, as one of my favorite sayings that you say all the time.
That's right.
And why that's so important.
Yeah, look, change is inevitable. And sometimes, you know, we're so strong here in the Southeast. We have better than 10% prices below national average. We have the highest levels of customer satisfaction. We have a wonderful, resilient system. We don't have the problems of blackouts that we just saw in Manhattan. Son of a gun. We're doing great. But here's the issue. Us being so good, does that put us into a cocoon where we don't feel the pressures of change that you see on the two coasts? Whether that's in the Northeast or in California, heaven forbid.
That's right.
But those forces are inexorable. The waves will hit the beach. And so what are we going to do about it? My view is, let's not take what comes. Let's invent the future.
Business Chronicle always likes to wrap up their things with some kind of poignant advice or something like that. So they certainly hit a question here. What top piece of advice do you... would you share with other CEOs, which is, I think, is an interesting angle, not, you know, the world in general, not necessarily the employees, but other CEOs, when you would get in the room with them, what advice would you give them?
You know, here again, basics, but it goes to listening first. And this other thing, the three most important words are tell the truth. The second most important three words are all the time. and again, that's not like lying. It's like, tell the truth, have the courage to see the world the way it is, not the way you want it to be. And to instill that courage and vision in the people that you work with. And then think about being bigger than your bottom line. Leadership for the good of the enterprise. Parochial interest, leadership just for your own sake, never lasts very long. So always have long-term objectives in mind.
Let's go over a couple things on the lighter side. They asked one of the best books you've read recently, and then I'll ask you some other things too.
So, well, I got three books when I was thinking about that. You know, the first book, best books, it's actually the worst book, but it was impactful. And it's this notion of, what is it, Lights Out by Ted Koppel. I love talking about that book. And Ted Koppel talked to me several times in writing that book. And I would consider that he and I have a friendly relationship. But I think that book is garbage. And the premise is, the first six chapters, is that there is no plan for national security and electricity. Therefore, the second six chapters are, you better have a big supply of meals ready to eat and bottled water. Okay. It's a cataclysmic outcome. That's just garbage. And here's the lesson, I think. Because as a nation, until then, we haven't engaged very much in the existential threats provided by cyber and physical terrorism to our industry. You know, it's almost like you and me, Skyler, going to go watch the cyber war, and yet we go on a beach, and it's actually a battle of submarines. We're standing there in the beach. We can't see a thing. It just looks normal to me.
Right.
And yet we know there is ongoing lethal activity underneath the waves, and you only see something when something cataclysmic happens. I think now a little over a year, where you and I were in Aspen about a year ago, where we started talking about the alignment of those in the government that will hold the bad guys accountable, whether that's Department of Defense, FBI, U.S. Cyber Command, that they really do stand shoulder to shoulder with us. And we started amping up that conversation. We really do have great plans in place. And if you'll excuse me, one other quick story. If you're ever getting ready to win a fist fight, there's three rules, right? Before you get into the rules, though, does anybody really want to get into a fist fight? And the joke is, unless you're Clint Eastwood or Sylvester Stallone, the answer is no.
Right.
But if you are going to, if the fist fight is unavoidable, if the conflict will happen, and in fact, it's happening every day, the three rules are simply this. The first rule. Pick the time and the place, get ready. Do everything you can do to influence the conditions under which the battle will be fought before the battle is fought. Second rule, hit first and make it count. If it's unavoidable, take the initiative. And that better be your first punch because you may not ever get another chance. Third rule, if you've been successful with that punch, you've knocked them down, kick them while they're down. In business school, that's translated as build a sustainable competitive advantage. But when you get an advantage in the marketplace, build upon it and sustain it. Don't hit and run. And so I think we're kind of doing that, but this book of Lights Out, Ted Koppel, here's the point I think where we are. Because some of these things are so hard to see, it's created an information vacuum. What we've done, especially in the past year or so, is fill that vacuum with our own story. And I think that is giving America a lot of comfort. It's still scary stuff to deal with, but that's why we got to talk to them. Last two things, last two books I'll just give you. These are my good examples, but they're old books. But I like revisiting.
Yeah, so the first one, Read But Don't Believe.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Gotcha. It's an example of if you don't tell your story, somebody else will tell it for you.
That's right. And in the wrong way, most likely.
And in the wrong way. Here's the second two, and I've done these over my years here, but I still think they're the best. Barbarians at the Gate. The story of the takeover of an iconic company, RJR Nabisco, that lost its way. And the story there is the barbarians are these outside investors that came and blew up this iconic company, cut it into a million pieces, and they made money in the process. But the employees of that company weren't well served. And frankly, the lesson is so compelling. If you don't run your business as well as you can, somebody else will. And so that must be a reason for us to step outside our comfort zone and be as good as we can be. Don't be good enough against a benchmark. Be as an aspiration, as good as you can be. And then the last book, The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Everybody knows that book, I guess. But it is still, I think, the timeless treatise on how to conduct competitive, combative operations. There's so much we can learn from that and how to run a company like Southern Company. And at the end of the day, I think one of the lessons there is, if you're in a conflict, taking the initiative, playing offense is always better than hunkering down and trying to fight the bad guys off when they inevitably will come to you.
That's interesting. It's funny, when you were talking about competitive advantages and moats and things like that, actually, and I should preview, when we talk next month, we'll get into much more football because we're right on the precipice of the start of pro football. We'll go into some futures on that. But there's been a lot of a change in the school of thought saying, if you're strong in the defensive line, draft defensive line, because you can stay strong on that. And if you are just trying to plug in weaknesses, you're not really making the team, the enterprise, better. Strength on strength is actually a way to be successful. Sort of interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, here you go. You what you want to do is be as good as you can be. I would argue the best thing to do is draft the best athlete available, right, irrespective of your need.
Right.
And frankly, build on strength, fix your weakness. That's great. But always take the initiative.
Right. Don't pass on the best athlete because you're like, oh, we're already good
there.
Yeah,
no.
Don't do that.
Always be as good as you can be all the time.
Is there anything on TV or a movie you've seen recently or anything like that that you've been doing over the summer?
You know, not really. I haven't. I don't go to the movies very much and don't watch a lot of TV. The TV I watch are kind of the political argument shows. I really do like those, the Sunday mornings and all that. And then sports.
You've been keeping an eye on the Braves?
Oh, yeah. They're terrific. God, it's a fun team to root for. And I tell you, one of the things I love about the Braves, nobody expected them last year. And this year, I think we had modest expectations, especially considering what the Phillies did and, you know, what the Mets did. But these guys rise up. And I love watching Ronald Acuna Jr. and Albies just show all the joy in the world in pursuing their profession. You know, I've coached many, many years. My own kids, I even started it when I was going to play football at West Point, got hurt, ended up and started coaching youth sports at Chastain Park, the Northside Youth Organization. And I always had these three rules, and the rules were essentially this. Don't worry about wins and losses. The first rule is do the right things. The second rule is do them to the best of your ability. The third rule is bring a sense of joy to what you're doing. Have fun. And my sense is if you follow those three rules, winning and losing takes care of itself.
Since we're on sports, I just wanted to touch on one last point here. In August, we're a few weeks out from the Tour Championship. We recently announced Payne Stewart Award, something that Southern Company has been involved with since its inception nearly 20 years ago. Hale Irwin, a very deserving champion.
You bet.
Southern Company's involvement in golf in the Payne Stewart Award, why it's so important.
Well, we're in our 20th year, right?
That's
so this is the 20th anniversary of this wonderful award, and I think it's really gaining a momentum. I think people are really understanding how important this is. And here's the deal. Southern's association with golf, really on a what side, is very understandable. The PGA, the Professional Golf Association, has a terrific brand, and it stands for ethics and telling the truth and also being engaged in the communities they serve. A certain amount of their purse every week goes to the communities, and that's a great thing. So it couples this idea of professionalism and doing it the right way with making sure that the community is better off because we're there, essentially a citizen wherever we serve. But the other association we have with golf really goes back to the origins of our company. You know, when we set up our first holding company, when Southern Company was born, back in, I guess it was Public Utility Holding Company Act 1935. Southern Company became its first incorporation in 1948. One of our first directors and stator director from 48 until 72 was Bobby Jones. Bobby Jones was a Georgia Tech grad, a lawyer here in Atlanta, and was known for his sportsmanship. He was really the first guy ever to win the Grand Slam. Back then, it was the British Open and the British Amateur and the U.S. Open and the U.S. Amateur. And he just stood out as a guy that was a real hero to America. And he embodied every ideal of fair play and the highest level of professionalism and a citizen of Atlanta. And son of a gun, he was on our board from 48 to 72. And also, Bobby Jones, his country club as he grew up in the city was Eastlake. That's where he learned how to play golf. And so the association of the Tour Championship and the Payne Stewart Award and Bobby Jones is just perfect for this company. And so that's why we do it. We're proud to associate ourselves with the hows of the PGA as well as the whats.
That's right. And if people are wondering why the Masters wasn't part of the Grand Slam at that point, it's because Bobby Jones hadn't founded it yet.
He designed Augusta National, for heaven's sake.
That's right. The longest serving director in Southern Company history, too.
Yep,
little
yep.
fact there. Tom, thank you for your time. We'll wrap that up here. I want to encourage everybody to send in questions via email. Go to tom.com. Go to the portal there. Ask questions. Believe it or not, Tom does answer all the questions that come there himself.
He mentions
email,
no
email
scripting.
And direct them.
That's right. Yeah.
We're glad that you joined us. Like we said, this will be the first of what we hope is many. And have a great day.
Yeah, great seeing y'all. Take care.
Thank you for listening to part one of our podcast with Skylar Bayman and Tom Fanning. Stay tuned for future podcast episodes with Tom Fanning on the SoPod Network.